Hello and welcome to Lush. You're listening to Origins, the programme that asks musicians, artists and creators where and how it all began, how it evolved and where it's at. John Robb was at the recent Sea Change Festival in Totnes to catch up with former guitarist with Loop, A&R man for Rough Trade and founder of 1965 Records, James Endicott.
I'm sat here with James Endicott.
Hello, John, how you doing?
And we're going to talk about, it's not a kind of normal shape interview, but we're going to talk about the music that first turned you on when you're younger, even the bit before, the first record you kind of loved.
First record I loved? You know what, the first record I loved, it was probably something like Simon and Garfunkel, or maybe, my mum had a record by Dori Previn called Mythical Kings and Iguanas, which now, listening to it now, it's quite a sort of early 70s, like really hippy-drippy LA-type record. But I remember listening, for some reason my mum had it. She wasn't a massive music fan, my mum, but she somehow had this record. I think maybe one of her boyfriends had bought it for her. But there was one of the words where she, Dori Previn says the F word, and I was completely fascinated by this, a swear word on a record.
Loved I two men equally well, though they were different as heaven and hell. One was an artist, one drove a truck, one would make love, the other would fuck. Each treated me the way he knew best. One held me lightly, one bruised my breast. And I responded on two different levels, like children reacting to angels and devils.
Do you know what I mean?
Because there was hardly any, was there?
Well, no, there was nothing then. I was also into Simon and Garfunkel, the sort of greatest hits album where they buy that fence. I like that one. Also, another one of my mum's boyfriends, because mum had a few boyfriends around that time, he bought me the Beatles White Album when I was like 8 or 9, and I love Piggies. I remember Piggies and Rocky Raccoon. I knew all the words for this.
Have you seen the little piggies crawling in the dirt? And for all the little piggies, life is getting worse. Always having dirt to play. Starched white shirts, you will find bigger piggies stirring up the dirt. Always have clean shirts to play around in.
I wasn't brought up with music, but they were, it was around me, and I loved things, and I loved it.
And that was in Halifax?
That was in Halifax where I was born. I was born in Halifax. And then when I went to secondary school, I really remember the moment, John. It's one of those moments that really sticks in my life. I remember as like in my first year at secondary school, I was at an old boys' grammar school in Halifax. It was called Heath. And they'd been there for like 350 years. And the teachers wore capes still. Huh. And it was quite hard. It was an old boys' school. I remember walking down the corridor and I saw a sixth former was walking towards me. This would have been about 1977. No, so maybe 70. Yeah, probably late 77. And this sixth form was walking towards, and you never spoke. You know, you didn't speak to sixth formers because they're really tall and you're really little. And obviously, when you're that age, your mum's bought you a really big jacket because it's got to last you for 5 years. So it's like hanging down there. The shirt's really long, and the shirts. Yeah, you're all out of sorts. And he was walking towards me. He's wearing a pair of white plimsoll trainers, and there's all this writing on it. I remember saying to him, I don't know why. I said, "What's all that writing on your trainers?" And he just stopped. He went, "They're bands." I went, "What?" He went, "They're bands." I looked down, it said X-Ray Specs, The Ruts, The Clash, Sex Pistols. I went, what are these? He went, "They're bands. They're like new bands. It's like new music. You should go and listen to it. You should hear about it." I said, "Well, how?" He goes, he said to me two things. He goes, "Go and buy The Enemy and listen to John Peel." And there's this one guy, and then he walked off. Little does that guy know, he changed my life. Because I did. I started reading The Enemy and I started buying those records. And that was it. I was off.
Yeah, and what was the first kind of gigs? I mean, obviously in Halifax, you're slightly cut off at the time. It's easy to move around.
It was really hard, John, because I was reading about bands and reading about gigs. There was a great record store in the Peace Hall. The Peace Hall's now been regenerated. It's like Rome of the North or some.
It's an amazing building.
Yeah. There used to be this market there on a Saturday morning. There's a guy there called Jeff who ran this record store called Groove, and I used to go in there with like my 70 pence to buy a 7-inch single. He'd lend me like 4 singles. I'd go home for the week and I could just buy one of them. But gigs was something that was alien to me. And then all of a sudden I remember reading, and this was February 1979. February 79, 78. I was 13, nearly 14. So it would have been, actually, it was February 79. I was 13 and I looked at the paper in the Enemy, and Stiff Little Fingers were playing at Halifax Civic Theatre in February. And it was about 2 weeks away.
79.
So, yeah. It was 79. It was 1979. It was about a month before my 14th birthday. I was 13 years old. And I see it, supported by Essential Logic and Robert Rental and the Normal.
And well, what a bill. It was
a Rough Trade tour. 75p a ticket. I went to go and buy a ticket, and I went. It was in this old Victorian theatre. And I went there, and I had the two Stiff Little Fingers singles. I had Alternative Ulcer and Suspect Device on Rigid Digits / Rough Trade Records. Didn't know anything about Essential Logic. I knew nothing about Robert Rental and Normal at all. I was 13. I go to the gig. Robert Rental and Normal were just weird. I just didn't get it. I think if I saw them now, I probably wouldn't get it, to be fair. Essential Logic came on. I really enjoyed them. You've got to remember, this is in this amazing, like, beautiful Victorian theatre. There's probably about 200 people there. And then on came Stiff Little Fingers. This was about a month before their debut album came out. And I was just absolutely just like spellbound. I was spellbound by this band. It was just, there's just like these shocks of like lightning going through my body and just like, oh my God, it's like this total awakening. I remember just stood there and the gig finished. And I knew the two singles. I knew the B-sides, 78 RPM. The B-side of Alternative Ulster, and the B-side of Suspect Device is Wasted Life, which they re-recorded for the album. It wasn't as good, but anyway, I'm there, and I'm watching, and the gig finishes, and I just think to myself, there's got to be more to this, John. There's got to be more to this. I wasn't fulfilled almost. I wanted more. I've got to go and speak to the band. Yeah. I have to speak to them. I don't know why. It's the first gig I've ever been to. I was on my own. I was 13. I've got to go and speak to the band. Right, how do I do this? What do I do? So I went outside. I went around the back. I thought, there's got to be a back door. There's got to be a stage door. Because there's an old theatre, it's set outside, stage door. So I knock on this door, and this guy answered. He went, yeah. I said, I want to see the band. And he just looked at me. I'm this skinny little 13-year-old kid. He went, yeah, okay, come on up. So I walked into the dressing room. And you've got to remember, the band themselves were probably only 5 years older than me. They're probably only 18 themselves. The time for me, they were men, and I walked in. And the first thing that really struck me, John, was the fact that the singer, Jake Burns, was wearing glasses backstage, but he hadn't been wearing glasses on stage. And this blew my mind. In that moment, it made me realise you can be something on stage that you're not necessarily in your real life. And I remember speaking to the bass player, Ali McMordy, blonde hair. And I said, he goes, how old are you? What are you doing? I went, I'm 13. I really love you. He said, what do you mean you love us? I've got your first singles. I'm 78 RPM. And I just started, and the band was just like blown away. Fucking, this 13-year-old kid in Halifax. And they said, what are you doing here? I said, well, I'm here to see you. How are you getting home? Oh, I'll get the bus. Anyway, I was there for about 5 minutes. And then I left, and I'd missed the last bus home. It was about 2 miles to my house. I'd missed the last bus home. My mum was on her own. My mum and dad had split up a few years ago. Anyway, she'd let me go to this gig, and she tells the story that during the evening she realised, I've sent my son, well, my son's going to a punk rock gig. Oh my God, what have I done? It's fine, he'll be, she knew what time the last bus was home. And she said, anyway, you didn't turn up. She says, I started freaking out, but I knew you were walking. So anyway, I'm walking, and I'm also with my brother as well, who was actually younger than me. My brother was younger than me, and I'm walking down the road, and I see these flashing lights. And it was, oh, it's my mum's car. Me and my brother were just sort of buzzing. My mum tells the story. She goes, I was so bloody angry with you two, so angry with you. And I got out of the car and I was going to really tear you into pieces and shout at you. Because I looked over and I'd never seen you smiling so much in your life. You were just the happiest I'd ever seen you in all your life. And I just thought, she said at that time, this is years later, she said, at that time I probably realised I've lost him to music. I've lost him. He's gone. Yeah, he's gone. And that was, it was a really pivotal moment.
That's true.
It's a totally true story. It's a totally true story.
I mean, the fact you were lost to music, I mean.
Yes, I was. I was totally
lost. What does a 13-year-old do with that energy? I mean, he starts not concentrating at school and.
No, I was, you know what, John? I was actually a really good kid. I used to do drama lessons. I was a really good student. I was quite smart. I was a very good, you know, I was a very good child. I wasn't a tearaway. I wasn't naughty. I was really good. I was quite a boring child, but I was just consumed by music. I was consumed by John Peel, that classic under the covers at night, listening to John Peel. We all did it.
So you're on that journey, that trip.
I'm on that trip, and I'm learning. I'm reading the music magazines, and I'm learning about bands. And then I remember, and I would start getting to Bowie, and I'm into Bowie and the Velvets, all that happens. At the same time, I listen to punk, and then things like Orange Juice start turning up, you know, in the early 80s. I'm a little bit older than I'm like 16 then. It's just like, I'm so, every waking day, it's just, that's what it is. Because I was really bullied at school for various reasons, which is actually in this book that you can buy on Rough Trade Pamphlets. And I was at school, and so music was the one thing that I could connect with other people about. And it's, and I wouldn't say it saved me, I'm not as stupid to say that, but it was something, I don't know, it was just something that I was just loved.
Did it empower you?
It did. It empowered me. It made me knowledgeable. It made me know I knew something that other people didn't. And I was part of a club. I did that horrible thing, though, that, you know, I wanted it all to myself. I wanted those bands. They were mine bands. There was a band from Bradford called 1919. Do you remember them?
We played a gig with them.
Yeah,
they 2 weeks ago in Italy.
No way.
And they're fantastic.
They had two. Yeah. They had two singles. One was a red sleeve. One was a thing, a blue sleeve. And I had those singles. I was obsessed by 1919. Southern Death Cult were a really favourite of mine, and they were spent a lot of time in Bradford. They were sort of part of that, yeah. And I loved Southern Death Cult.
Is that feel because it was local? It
was local as well, and I really liked that local thing about it. I remember seeing them in Bradford Uni on the day the single, the only one 17-inch single they did, Moya and Fat Man. Yeah. I remember going to that gig, and it wasn't a busy gig. It was like Bradford Uni or Poly or whatever. I remember buying the single at the day and going, and I got it signed by Buzz and Aki, but I couldn't find Ian and was the other one in the band? I can't remember.
Buzz Aki.
Was it Dill? No, that was Dill in Big Flame.
I'm gonna remember in a minute. Yeah,
anyway, you got me Barry.
Yeah,
Barry.
Barry the bass player. He's still around.
Barry the bass player. The kids have a Coca-Cola mission to the doctor. Yeah. I was obsessed by Southern Death Cult, and I was just, it was like, they were my bands, they were mine, it was me. And when some of those bands start to get famous and start to get, like, for example, the Cult is a great example, because when Southern Death Cult became Death Cult, and then they became the Cult, and they became really big, and I sort of, oh, I'm not interested. It was almost like with Orange Juice, when they had a big hit with, like, Rip It Up, I was like, oh, I can't be bothered. Yeah. But now, I'm happy. I embrace success.
You're relieved they've actually made it.
Exactly.
And this empowered you to go to London and start doing the thing?
No, not at all. No, I never had pretensions to be in a band or anything. I don't know why. I wanted to be a stand-up comedian. Mm-hmm. I also wanted to be a journalist as well, because I think they're both quite similar occupations, aren't they?
Yeah, one's more comical than the other.
Well,
yeah.
And I'm...
Let's work that one out, yeah?
Let's work that one out, shall we? So I went to university down in Devon, actually, where we are now, but I went to Devon in Exworth to be, and I did English and drama. And I moved to London, and within about 2 months of living in London in 1986, I bumped into some guys who were in a band called Loop, who needed a new guitarist. And I never played guitar, but I liked the 35 Aces, I liked the Stooges. John, I looked amazing, as you well remember. I was slim and I was wearing black. I looked like a total rock god.
But you looked different from the rest of them, if I remember.
Well, yeah, well, I did look different, because I had a shock of sort of gingery, sort of,
yeah,
like,
in a cool way, I thought.
Thank you very much, John.
A very classic little...
yeah, that little bob.
The whole thing. Yeah.
So, and then I just joined the band, and then that was it. And then I went off, and then I became part of the furniture, I guess.
Of that point of time back in Halifax, that moment, you know, the alpha moment, how much does that inform you nowadays? Do you feel formed by it, or do you feel very detached from it?
I feel the older I'm getting, John, the more and more I'm feeling attached and informed by what happened in Halifax. For years, I sort of dismissed my youth and just been, oh, whatever. I'm here now, I'm in London, I'm working at Rough Trade Records. I work with bands like The Strokes and The Liberties, big successful bands. And I kind of dismissed Halifax and dismiss what I did. It's only, funny enough, it's only, I would say, in the last 12 months. I'm now in my 50s. It's only the last 12 months that I've really come to realise that it's because of that place that I'm who I am, and I've got a real affection for the place. That it's growing by the week. I may end up moving back there to that area sometime. I don't know, but there's something about that place, and I'm really glad that I came out of that place, because I think to go back there, I'm actually going back there in about a month or two's time to give a little talk about something, and I'm really, really excited about it. I'm really looking forward to it, because I want to just say, look, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter where you're from, and you could do this. You don't need to go to, you don't need to go to London. You don't need to do all those things. Do you know what I mean? You can do this. But I definitely think. I don't think it's just necessarily the place that made me who I am, or what I am, or what I believe in. It was my upbringing as well, which is pretty messed up. But I do think Halifax, the West Yorkshire mentality, is. I think it's helped me.
And what about that music? Like, if you hear Stiff Little Fingers now, does it have any resonation?
Yes. Oh, absolutely. I mean, yeah. I mean, that first album, Infallible Material, will always have a special place in my heart. I'll tell you a very sad story, actually, John. So many, many years later, I'm working at, I was very lucky to work at Rough Trade Records for many years. I'm at Rough Trade Records in the early 90s. And there weren't many, it was maybe about eight of us there. And the phone, when the phone used to ring, the phone, everybody's phone rang. Whoever picked up the phone said, hello, all kinds of, so you just pick up the phone. So the phone rang one day, and this guy said, can I speak to Jeff Travis, please? I went, yeah, who's calling, please? It's Jake Burns, who's a singer of Stiffoot Fingers, as you well know. And this is like, oh my, and it just all came flooding back to me, the gig and everything. Yeah. And I just started, I went, Jake, Jeff's here, but I just really want to tell you something. He went, okay, what is it? And I just told him the whole story I've just told you about going to see the band when I'm 13, going backstage, da 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 da. I told this, I was pouring myself out, and I was like, I was so happy telling this person. This person had such a big influence on my life, and I was really happy telling him. And he's, and at the end of it, he said, yeah, yeah, really, really good. Can I speak to Jeff, please? I was just like broken hearted. I went, oh, I just wanted you to tell you how funny it was. So it was quite weird, but anyway.
Yeah.
But yeah, of course, those early, I'm sure with you, John, as well, those early records mean something to you. I could be a soldier, go out there and fight to save this land. Of course, those early, I'm sure with you, John, as well, those early records mean something to you. Mm. And they're not the greatest records in the world. And they're like, records to me, music to me is like photographs. They're just photographs. They're photographs and they bring back great, happy memories. But I think they're also informing me about who I am. In fact, I'm glad that those records mean a lot to me. And it's just that excitement. When I tell you about seeing Stiffoot Fingers for the first time, or seeing my first ever gig, I tell you, 40 years later, and it still sends shivers down my spine. Yeah. Still sends shivers down my spine. And I think, and I never want to lose that. Mm. And you know what, John? I think I've lasted 40 years without losing it. I think I can manage for if I make another 40 years.
All right, thanks a lot, James.
Cheers, mate. Yeah, thanks a lot, John. All. Cheers, all mate. Right. Thank you.
For further information on James, go to Twitter at James Endicott. Thank you very much for listening. And if you'd like to hear more from Lush and our ever-growing archive containing interviews, debates, comedy and stories with a wide range of charities, organisations and individuals, please download the free Lush Player app, which is available for both Android and Apple.